The time is now. Volume 7, Episode 137. This is Employment Law Now. I am Mike Schmidt, your host of this podcast and the Vice Chair of the Labor and Employment Department here at Cozen O'Connor. We talk a lot about laws and regulations and court cases on this podcast, that all of which attempt to address the employer-employee relationship. We spend a lot of time as well talking about employer goals and how employers should strive to best accomplish those goals. I want to give some expanded thought today on the latter point, and specifically on one of those potential goals to accomplish: manager training and avoiding the Peter principle. Now, wait. I know that I and likely others you've spoken with when it comes to employment law and HR issues have talked ad nauseum about training of your workforce, training on an annual basis. Who doesn't know at this point in 2023 about the need and the benefit, and in some states the obligation, to do trainings on workplace issues such as harassment, discrimination, and retaliation? That was actually rhetorical. I can't see your hand up anyway. But here's the thing. HR professionals get this notion of the need for workplace training and mostly understand the need for compliance in these areas. In-house legal departments, general counsel, also tend to understand the need for workplace training. Even C-suite executives, those on the C-suite executive team, they sometimes get it as well, the need for workplace training. Critically, though, and while this does differ by company and by size of company, none of those people, whether HR professionals, in-house legal, C-suite executives, none of those people tend to be on the front lines working day-to-day with your company's employees. You know who is? The day-to-day managers and supervisors. So the question is, are the day-to-day frontline managers and supervisors getting this training on how to be managers and supervisors? Or does your company just assume everybody knows how to manage and supervise? Again, what's the goal here? It's not to, at the end of the day, create a workplace of complaints and disgruntled employees. Remember, there is a reason why the cliche, a happy employee is a productive employee, is in fact a cliche. It's still accurate. The goal is also not just to spend time figuring out how to best support disciplining one of your employees or terminating one of your employees. No, you've invested a lot of time and money in your employees, and I presume that your goal here is to get the most out of them and have them be as productive as they can be, to have a workforce that is as productive as it can be to serve the company's business interests. So how can you accomplish that goal? I believe it's by having the right managers and supervisors who are actually leading your employees. Who can describe the best manager any better than Michael Scott of the hit series The Office?
People say, "I am the best boss." They go, "God, we've never worked in a place like this before. You're hilarious. And you get the best out of us."
So, have you ever heard about the Peter Principle? The Peter Principle. It's a management concept going back to the late 1960s, and a book with the same name that was authored by Lawrence Peter and Raymond Hull. The thesis of the book, of the Peter Principle, is that, quote, every employee tends to rise to his level of incompetence, end quote. Think about that for a second. Every employee tends to rise to his level of incompetence. Put it another way, it describes, the Peter Principle does, the reality where employees continue to be promoted based on longevity and based on the success that they had in their previous jobs, and that employees are continuously promoted until they reach a level where they are no longer competent to perform. How many times do we see this in organizations where the person in the position of manager is a manager because he or she has just been there a long time? It's not necessarily because that individual, that manager, is good at managing, let alone managing at that particular level where he or she has been promoted to. In other words, the focus is on past accomplishments rather than current or future capabilities. So one strong way to avoid the negative consequences of having a bad or poorly matched manager or supervisor is to focus on manager training. Let me be clear. The point here is not to, of course, turn all of your managers into HR professionals or employment lawyers. But part of the job of being a manager is to manage. And they're the front line of day-to-day conversations. They are the front line of day-to-day interactions with your rank-and-file employees. I would say that typically the reason something gets to HR, to in-house, or to the C-suite is because an issue has already happened that a particular manager either created or failed to address or escalate. So shouldn't these frontline managers and supervisors be actually trained on what it means to be a manager, to be a true leader of people? How do you manage today's workforce? Isn't that something that they should hear about? Isn't that a discussion that you should be having? Today's workforce is much different than it was 10 and 20 years ago. We've talked about that on the podcast in context of new rules, new regulations, and new case decisions. But has your organization thought about actually training your managers on how to manage today's workforce? Today's workforce is one that is much more intelligent than 10 or 20 years ago. It has much more access to information, and it has much more access through social media and otherwise to others who want to act collectively, more so again than 10 and 20 years ago. Today's workforce is one, especially post-pandemic, that continues to work remotely, continues to be located all over the place, different parts of the country, maybe different parts of the world. It is a workforce today that is suffering more from and talking more about mental health issues. Today's workforce is a workforce where we are seeing increasingly blurred lines between personal lives and social or political causes on the one hand, and the work time of employees on the other hand. Today's workforce, again, is different than it was 10, 20 years ago. So might it be worth thinking about focusing your training spend and time teaching managers how to be managers, how to be leaders of people in today's workforce? So that's the first component of this conversation that perhaps you should be having within your organizations. And then when you think about giving them some sort of a summary of how to be managers, how to be leaders generally, maybe you want to think about coming up with a top five, for example, a top five list of employee issues that tend to come up that your frontline managers and supervisors should be aware of. There's a whole host of issues and topics that you can include in your manager training, but let me suggest five to think about. Number one, of course, discrimination, harassment, and retaliation. Yes, I think most, if not all of you out there are doing some form of harassment, discrimination, and retaliation training for your workforce generally. But are you tailoring that to your managers, your frontline managers and supervisors? Not only for them to understand how to avoid being the one accused of discrimination, harassment, or retaliation, but what specifically are manager responsibilities when it comes to creating the appropriate work environment? Or what do managers need to do when they are put on notice, either actual notice or constructive notice, that someone may be the victim of discrimination, harassment, or retaliation? There may be specific manager responsibilities. What should they do? How should they react? And who should they go to in your company when they become aware of something that's going on in the workplace that may be inappropriate? Topic number two for your potential manager training: leave and medical condition issues. We know that employees don't always start off by going to HR, assuming there is an HR department in your organization. We understand that employees don't always start off by going to a third-party leave administrator, assuming your organization has a third-party leave administrator. Very often, an employee will speak with his or her manager or supervisor about some trouble they're having doing their job because of a medical condition, physical or mental, or some accommodation that they need. Maybe it's time off for doctor's appointments. Maybe it's some accommodation relating to scheduling or some physical attribute of their work environment, even if the employee doesn't use the word accommodation. So what should these frontline managers and supervisors do with that? And what steps should the frontline managers take? What should they say and what shouldn't they say when they're having a conversation, when they are approached, or when they become aware that an employee may need help with something? Those are the things that you should consider talking to your managers about and perhaps giving them some training on. Topic number three for potential manager training: wage and hour and timekeeping. We continue to see a proliferation of cases out there when it comes to wage and hour cases, both in the sense of misclassification of those employees who have been classified as exempt for purposes of overtime, but also when it comes to issues relating to your non-exempt workforce, punching in, punching out, clocking in, clocking out, being asked to allegedly work off the clock, changing exempt employees' duties in a way that may pose a disconnect between the actual day-to-day activities of the employee and what is written and expected from the job description. We've seen a lot of cases where there is no accountability for employees who are classified as exempt, but who end up, for a variety of reasons, primarily serving to do non-exempt functions. It's not the HR professional, the in-house legal team, or even the C-suite executive who tends to know on a day-to-day basis what employees are doing on a day-to-day basis. Again, it's the frontline managers and supervisors. So what is allowed? What is not allowed? What should be said and should not be said? What processes are in place to make sure that we don't have certain commitments, certain representations being made about overtime or about payment for overtime or wages generally? The folks on the front line, your managers and your supervisors, they should be the ones to have some answers to these questions because they're the ones dealing with it. So wage and hour and timekeeping issues might, I suggest, be a topic that's appropriate for discussion when it comes to manager training. Topic number four for your potential manager training: unionization. In 2023, we have seen, more so perhaps than past years, a significant spike in unionizing efforts around the country, a significant increase in representation petitions and elections being filed. More and more people at more and more companies are desiring, for a whole host of reasons, to form or join a union. What should the frontline managers and supervisors be able to say or do or not say or do to avoid the kinds of issues that prompt employees to want to organize collectively and perhaps look for union representation in the first place? What can be done on the frontline manager level to avoid these kinds of issues? Or when there is some union organizing, some discussion about potential union representation, what are the do's and don'ts that a manager should be aware of? I suggest to you that this is also a topic that might be included in manager-specific training. And finally, at least for today's purposes, number 5 of my top 5 list of manager training topics you might consider for your organization, performance management. I've said it before and I'm going to say it again. It is not just about making sure that you do performance reviews at your organization. It is about making sure that you do effective performance reviews. Again, what's your goal here? Your goal, I think, is to performance manage to maximize the productivity and the value of employees. If you're not going to make them truthful, if you're not going to make your performance reviews accurate or truly representative of what's going on with that individual employee, you might as well not do them. I can't tell you how many times I've seen cases come in. For example, an age discrimination lawsuit where an employee is terminated and the employee decides to make a claim or sue alleging that it must have been because of her age that she was terminated. When I go and talk to the company representatives to get some background and get a sense of what's going on with this individual and this termination, what do I tend to hear? Well, no, she was terminated for poor performance. Her performance continued to get worse over the months and years until we just couldn't have it anymore. Our business people needed to get rid of her. So, of course, as any lawyer, I would think, would say in response, I say to the company, well, let me take a look at the performance reviews that this individual has been given. And lo and behold, I can't tell you how many times I've gotten those performance reviews, and they've been glowing. Or at best, they've been neutral. The point is, the performance reviews do not accurately support the notion that the individual A, had performance problems, and B, that the individual was ever counseled for those performance deficiencies. And again, there are two problems with that. Problem number one, you're probably not utilizing your performance management processes to accomplish your goal of maximizing productivity of your employees. But problem number two is when and if you do have a litigation issue down the road, it's going to be difficult to impossible to defend a termination on performance grounds when your contemporaneous performance documentation does not support the claim you're now making as a defense in your litigation. So the question is, do the managers who are actually doing the performance reviews, do the managers who are engaging in the discussions and the interactions when it comes to performance management, do they know how to do effective performance reviews? Just because they have a manager title, or they've been promoted up to a manager position, does not necessarily mean that they do. Do they know what to say in a performance review and what not to say? Do they know what they're truly trying to assess for the positions that they manage? How to engage in performance management, how to engage in effective performance reviews and performance management, I submit to you, is topic number 5 for what you might consider to include in specific manager training. At the end of the day, your managers and supervisors are the faces and the voices that your workforce sees and hears on a day-to-day basis. They should be the ones who have some basic knowledge about what to say, what to do, to avoid potential exposure to employment and HR issues, and they should be the ones who are trained on how to best do the thing that managers do, and that is manage. How can we be good leaders to get the most out of our employees? And how can we make sure that those on the front line are doing and saying all they can to minimize exposure to potential claims down the road? I hope all of you give some thought to that when it comes to any upcoming time and spend in the area of workplace training. Until the next time, I also hope that all of your labor is productive.